Welcome to the Rewilded Human Podcast, where Dr. Lucille and Lynn will tackle your most difficult and intimate questions with candor, tough love, and a little dash of humor. In today's episode...
When certain anxious people get more anxious, what they try to do is control other people around them, right? Oh, let's fix you fast so that there's no more cancer in our community. There's no more cancer that's looming that we have to talk about or any. Let's fix you fast.
But for the time being, she has to, you know, put up with her work environment, which became very toxic for her, especially during the pandemic. All her co-workers kind of turned on her and she was shunned by everyone. So I think the whole environment is very, very toxic for her and she's just not happy there anymore.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Rewilded Human Podcast. I'm Dr. Lucille, and this is my absolutely beautiful and brilliant co-host, Dr. Lynn Hardy. And I do like to use her doctor, sir title every once in a while because she is brilliant at what she does. Today in our episode, we have a lot of really deep relationship problems that a lot of people are needing to work out, and problems with relationships with themselves too. So why don't we just dive right in? So we have Marianne, who is reeling and has no support. I was diagnosed with an advanced case of cancer out of the blue. On top of dealing with the shock and scrambling to find the right treatments, I feel burdened by friends and acquaintances who keep telling me what I should do, even though I've never asked them and they're not health practitioners. How can I get them off my back? I feel for you, Marianne. Do you know people who've been through this, Lynn?
Yes, happens all the time. And everyone becomes a cancer expert. And first of all, Marianne, we truly feel for you. And our hearts go out to you. Very, very difficult time. And everybody becomes an oncologist and an expert. And everyone has a solution. And my grandmother did this and this. They did that for that dog and that. And all of a sudden you're buying like a million different products and because they're all going to cure cancer. And it's a very, very, very difficult situation. You just have to tell them that you're doing your own thing and you appreciate their support. You know, this is not helping. Like, I don't know, Lucille, what would you say to her to tell people?
You know, Marianne, I agree with Lynn. This is a very, very common problem actually. And you have to realize that you are entitled to do your journey the way you need to do your journey. You have to be.
People want to help. You know, you feel like when someone tells you something like this, you feel like, I want to give a solution. I want to help you.
Absolutely.
It's coming from a good place.
Sometimes, yes, but a lot of it is about the other person's feeling anxious. You know, you know, whenever the word cancer is mentioned, people can get very anxious and very triggered. Their own internal anxieties about the possibility of getting cancer are, you know, intensified. And when certain anxious people get more anxious, what they try to do is control other people around them, right? Oh, let's fix you fast so that there's no more cancer in our community. There's no more cancer that's looming that we have to talk about or any. Let's fix you fast. So a lot of it is from people's own fears and insecurities. And I don't buy into, well, they're just trying to help. I actually don't buy into that very much. It may look like that, but if you're really trying to help, what you would do is realize you're not an oncologist. You don't have any training. You have no right to pile something onto this person who's already probably spending hours and hours researching and talking to doctors and doing all her own investigations about what's possible, what's not. You don't want to burden that person. But what you can be for that person is a sympathetic, empathetic listener, and maybe somebody, if they need to bounce ideas off of, you can, you know, maybe give them some objective feedback. But that what people need in that situation is not what you want them to have. So for the people on the other side who are trying to help, quote unquote, help Marianne, I would say that's not helping at all. And that's why I also say for people like Marianne, be very, very clear that, you know, you having cancer has triggered everybody else's anxieties, and that's not your problem. That's just not your problem.
Yeah.
And I agree with Lynn that, you know, it's just a matter of being very polite but firm and saying, I have all the information that I need to go the next step and get more information. I'm talking to all the right people. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You have to shut it down quickly because it's going to drive you crazy.
Oh,
I had a very good friend who had colon cancer. This was about 7-8 years ago. And, you know, I was trying to help her. Of course, she came to me for help and she was asking me for advice. And she was so overwhelmed because everyone was telling her different things to do. And they were, of course, conflicting information. Eat this, don't eat that, eat the opposite of that. And your mind just goes crazy. And when you're dealing with a diagnosis like that, what you need is peace of mind. You know, you need to have peace, tranquility. And the last thing you need is to have a completely confused mind where you don't know what to do. So
absolutely. And you're taking on everybody else's anxiety and stress. You've got enough of your own. Don't.
And maybe with other people, it's best not to even share the information. You know, if it's not, not a close person or a close relative that is actually going to be helpful to you, then it's maybe best not to even share the information. There's no reason to.
I agree.
I think it's just a really, really awkward thing. It's like one of those things where people do, you do, like Lucille said, you have this anxiety and you don't know how to handle it. You don't know how to respond. And you just kind of go into this nervous mode and you start spitting out information that is perhaps not helpful at all and not warranted and not asked for. So, Marianne, we wish you all the best.
All the best. Let's hope that you get through to the other side and you completely recover from this and that you have some peace.
Absolutely. We wish you like a really quick recovery and a really strong emotional support from your friends and family, and hopefully they can come around and give you that. That is super, super important at this point in your life. Now we're on to Lisa. Lisa has no support with her problem. Another person lacking support. What's going on with you guys today? After decades of emotional suffering, I finally got into psychotherapy. It's been very helpful for trauma. But when I tried to share my experience with my cousin and a friend, they tell me to just stop blaming my parents and suck it up. But I've been sucking it up for decades. And now I finally feel I'm coming out from under all my suffering. How do I get them to understand this? Is it important for them to understand this? Why is it so important for you, Lisa, to convince them to understand? I mean, you know, obviously when they're saying to you, suck it up, that's very disrespectful because they don't understand the trauma and the emotional suffering that you're going through or what you endured in your life. So it's easy for them to say, suck it up. You know, we all process these emotions and these traumas differently. But, you know, if the psychotherapy is helping you, then that's wonderful. I mean, you have to keep going and doing what is helping you in this situation rather than paying attention to what other people think or what how they're judging you dealing with this situation. Lucille, what do you think?
Well, I thought the first thing you said was also brilliant, Lynn, which is, well, why do you have to get them to understand? And you may have a very good reason, like maybe you don't have many people to confide in. This is an important part of your life and you would like to get some emotional support with it. It's very, you know, it can be like hugely shocking to people when they're starting in psychotherapy, especially about longstanding abuse issues. It's shocking. And it's like their whole world gets turned upside down and they're starting to put the pieces together and they're starting to feel like they're a little more empowered and they're understanding so many things about their lives and having aha moments. And it's, you know, in that way, it's great, but it's such an upheaval in many ways too. Life, the way you thought it was, is not the way it really was. And it helps when you've got people in your corner who understand that and are there to support you with that and to say, you know, we get it, keep going, you're doing amazing, or even they corroborate that, yeah, it was a really toxic environment that you grew up in, and we're so glad that you're really healing now, you're taking your power and you're healing from it. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. People really do need that when they're dealing with these important abuse issues. And it may be, I don't know, Lisa, maybe you don't feel you have anybody else that you feel you can confide in or get support from. And that's perfectly understandable. But I would say, I agree with Lynn that their response to you is so disrespectful and shows their complete ignorance of what psychotherapy, good psychotherapy, is really all about, that you might have to go into protective mode and just stop talking to them about it completely. And maybe, I don't know, maybe you find another source of support. It could be like a Facebook group of people who are, you know, working their way out of abuse histories, or they're doing their own therapy, whatever. But certainly I support you. You do need that emotional backing of somebody, right?
Absolutely. Do you find that people do get judgmental, you know, when people go and get therapy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. You're showing me up, so to speak. You're going to therapy and you're dealing with your stuff. I chose not to deal with it.
Yeah.
And what, you know, are you trying to say there's something wrong with me because I'm not going to therapy? Or and if it's a relative, they may not want to look at what was really going on in the family. Mm-hmm. It may be really just so shocking to them, something that, again, turns their whole life around, if they even thought that there was sexual abuse or other kinds of abuse happening to their siblings or their family members. Because most of the time when that happens, parents or whoever's in authority in the family will make everything look normal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's a big, big internal imperative that we look good to the outside world, and we don't breathe a word of any of this.
Exactly. Deny, deny, deny.
Right. And so if you're in denial, and I have so many people who come to me, you know, and they start and they say, geez, I've had this depression for so long, or I've had anxiety symptoms for so long. I ask them about, you know, how they grew up, what their family was like. And they'll tell, oh, yeah, we were a happy and close family. And then when we really dig into it, we find that, you know, dad came home drunk every Friday night and beat up the mother in front of the kids, you know, but everything was kept hush hush. And nobody ever talked about it. So the kids got a really bizarre viewpoint on what family is like, and that that you can't talk about these horrible things that go on, or you're going to like really destroy the family system.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. So, yes, Lynn, yeah, a lot of people who are relatives or close friends of the people who have gone through the abuse, they don't want to hear about it. It will just upend their life and how they saw their past too.
And it's really sad that sometimes you see it in families that people actually remember things completely differently. You know, that you might remember this uncle as being the sweetest, nicest guy, meanwhile he was abusing you. And so, you know, a lot of times it's different stories, conflicting stories. And I think my memory is the correct one, so you're wrong. And
sure.
I'm sure there could be a lot of judgment and a lot of miscommunication, mm-hmm. and or just bad memories that or not remembering things correctly. So it's
absolutely
a very difficult situation, Lisa. We absolutely feel for you, and good for you for getting help. And we are so glad that it is helping, and, you know, keep going, and hopefully you'll be able to heal.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the most important thing.
Yes, truly. And let's hope you find like healthier support along the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, Vicky is worried about total burnout. What can I do when I feel totally overwhelmed at work? I spend all my time there and no longer feel motivated. I don't enjoy what I'm doing and I've lost all interest. How do I avoid this burnt out feeling? Do you run across this a lot, Lynn?
Yeah, I think this happens a lot. This is kind of like how in relationships as well, you know, how you get the 7-year itch. And then you also in your workplace, you get this after, I don't know how many years, but after a while you feel like I've like reached my limit. There's nowhere to grow from here. And you're just kind of stuck in a rut, especially when you're working for someone else. And perhaps this is not the career choice that you would have chosen for yourself. You're just not happy with what you're doing anymore. Yeah, it's really hard, especially when you have like, I know Vicky personally, so I know she has a family, she has children and everything. So it's very difficult to to make a change, make a drastic change and just start a new career. She's doing very well because she's gone back to school. And so she is learning new things and learning new skills, and that will open new doors for her as well. But for the time being, she has to, you know, put up with her work environment, which became very toxic for her, especially during the pandemic. All her co-workers kind of turned on her and she was shunned by everyone. So I think the whole environment is very, very toxic for her, and she's just not happy there anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very difficult it's a very difficult situation to be in, and what a horrible feeling to wake up every morning and think, oh my God, I have to go to work.
I have to go to work. I know. Yeah. It's dreadful.
That is horrible. Absolutely dreadful. And to do that, you know, 5 times a week and to spend most of your life there is very, very toxic. So ultimately, I think when it gets to that point, it's very difficult to change your mindset and to try to enjoy it and enjoy the people that you're working with when all you want to do is get out of there. It's like when you come to the end of a marriage and you're like, I'm done, right? And then you say, well, just go home and enjoy your husband. Well, you can't, right? Because you're done. Would you have any suggestions for Vicky? What do you think Lucille could do?
No, I think if Vicky is seems like she's trying to work her way out of it, if she's going back to school, hopefully she's studying something that she really feels that she can invest in terms of her future career. And I think that's the key here, is that if you honestly feel that there is nothing more that you can do to improve this job situation, then you make the job situation as small a part of your life as you possibly can. And one of the things that happens is people get really disappointed if their work, like say they think they found the job of their dreams and that's going to lead them places, and eventually they're going to become CEO of the company and great things are going to happen and it turns out to be quite the opposite. You have to just kind of grieve your expectations. They're dead. This job is not going to get you where you want to go. And unfortunately, too many people still think that, you know, they can have a lifelong career at this one particular job and then realize it's just not going to work out for them. And so it's okay to say, I'm just doing it for the money. Yeah. I'm just doing it for the money. There's no shame in that. I'm still trying to do the best I can, but I have something else in my life that is worthwhile and important. So, you know, kudos to you, Vicky. If you've gone back to school and you're finding something that you enjoy doing there, studying, wonderful. And also, you know, to try and minimize all the time and effort that you put into the work. And I'm not saying that you don't do the job that you're supposed to do, but you don't give it any emotional importance. Your focus is maybe, I can't wait to go home because I am going to paint that beautiful painting that I have in my head right now. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going home working at the Humane Society. I love taking care of those dogs or whatever. You want to make the other part of your life that's fulfilling, more fulfilling than your job, until you can get out of that job, right? You just want to have a full and rich life and not over-focus on how dreadful the job is.
Yeah, absolutely. Or maybe even reducing the number of days or the number of hours that you're working.
Yes, or trying to negotiate working from home, which a lot of people are doing now. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That could also work. And then have this goal in mind that eventually I will get out and I will do something else. And then really, like Lucille said, to focus on that rather than on the bad things that you don't enjoy about this work anymore. Mm-hmm. And yeah, eventually, I mean, I think when it gets to that point, eventually you just have to quit and move along. I mean, it's amazing how many people actually stay in these toxic work environments until retirement for the rest of their lives, and they hate every single moment. And then, you know, when they finally do retire, then all of a sudden all these illnesses come from all these things that you kept inside. Right. So, a toxic environment can make you physically ill, which you don't want. So the solution, even if you have, even if it's a pay cut or doing something else, sometimes you have to just walk away and do something else for the sake of your mental health, which is super
important. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that brings us to the last question today. It's our number one fan. Dawn is back with a question about solitude. Thank you for your questions, Dawn. Keep them coming. As I've gotten older, I find myself withdrawing from society more and more. Finding my greatest inner peace comes from being alone in nature. Is this healthy, or do you think this is harmful for me moving forward? Well, I mean, if you're finding this amazing inner peace being alone in nature, then how can that be bad for you? Right?
It's an absolutely brilliant comment. Yes, I agree. I agree, Lynn.
Anything that makes you feel good can only be good for you. I can totally relate to this because I love nature. I love hiking. I love being alone. I love my alone time, but I also like my social time. Like, I really like a balance. I do need people around me, so I can relate to both. I can understand solitude. I can understand withdrawing from society because I think there's such a huge divide in society between our different points of view on everything now. You know, it's not just about politics and religion. It's about so much more. It's our worldview right now that is so important. And I think Dawn can relate to this, but I just can't do the shallow small talk anymore. I think it's just a waste of my time, complete waste of time. You know, I don't want to sit around doing chit chat, small talk, talking about the weather, the awkward silences. I can't do that. Then I'd rather be alone. You know, you need to have quality friends and quality people around you who share your views. So important now. So if you can, until you find your tribe, Dawn, I think there's nothing wrong with solitude. But I think human connection is also important. So it's really important to find a balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually very interesting. I think, Dawn, you may not be aware of it, but you are going through a very healthy phase of aging, that the people who age successfully, in other words, they remain relatively vibrant and youthful and they are healthy on so many levels, they're the ones who do find more enjoyment in solitude. And that just naturally happens as we get older, if we're lucky. So I think that you should feel very grateful that you're feeling this way about being in solitude and being especially in solitude in nature. I don't know. My thing is, and I know, Lynn, you're in nature all the time, but I don't really feel alone when I'm in nature.
No.
You know, it's like there. You can feel the life force all around you, and just the beauty feeds you and the peace feeds you. I don't think it's bad at all. I agree with you, Lynn, that it is very, very healthy.
And there's something wonderful about being able to be alone with your thoughts.
Yeah.
Because most people can't do that. You know, they need to be listening to something and doing something constantly. And people, how often do most people actually sit alone in their thoughts without devices, without a book, without listening to anything, just sitting out there in silence? I mean, there's something to be said for that. That's quite powerful.
Yes, absolutely. That is the truth, that people, as they age, the successful aging ones enjoy our own company because it's kind of like we are having conversations with ourselves in our heads, you know, and those conversations are deep. It's not like, oh, gee, did I buy the right shade of lipstick this time? You know, it's not like that. It's about really reflecting more in depth about your life, about other people's lives, about what's going on around you. You know, if you can have those lovely conversations inside your own head, I agree with Lynn that you have a real gift there. It's a real gift, and treasure it, and it will keep you strong and resilient for the rest of your life.
Yeah, which we're going to need for the years coming up, right? Lucia,
yes.
have you heard this, that something like 30 to 60% of people have no inner dialogue in their minds?
I think they probably do have inner dialogue, but it's not the kind that it's in any way healthy, I should say, right? It's the inner dialogue of, oh, you screwed up there. Oh, who do you think you are? Oh, you blurted out the wrong thing.
People I've heard, they have nothing. Like, they have absolute silence. There's nothing going on in their mind.
Then maybe they're Zen meditators.
Because truthfully, I was shocked.
I don't understand. understand that. I don't
know. No, I've got like 100 different people talking in there. There's like madness going on like all the time. You know, it's like on the computer when you have 100 tabs open, then now that's my mind. I mean, that's completely my mind. And I was just reading this in a group and all these people are coming. No, I have no inner dialogue. I have no inner dialogue. What?
Then maybe, I don't know what the definition they have of inner dialogue is, but
no, there's nothing. There's silence.
First of all, it's very hard. Like Zen meditators like to get to that state of inner, like complete inner silence, where it's just a pure awareness. It takes people decades if you're doing it diligently to get there. So if you're not there, you're either, maybe you have been, you know, doing the Zen meditation for decades and there, and congratulations, therefore. The only other time that I see this is with people who are really severely depressed, and they really report that their brains are empty. Wow. But everything about them feels empty, like empty and flat, and nothing's going on in there, you know? So anyway, I would just, that seems very surprising to me too. Thanks for bringing it up. I'll put my eye out for it, but I don't know what that really means. And I don't know what, I would be curious to talk to those people to see what they mean about they have no inner dialogue. I don't know.
No, it's super interesting. Maybe we'll do a post about that on Instagram. It would be interesting to get some feedback and see how people, but back to you, Don. We think this is fine and there's nothing wrong with you. But you know, do try for a balance, because human connections are also important for longevity and everything. So if you can find the right people to hang out with and spend your time with, then a little bit of both would be even more beneficial, I think, in my opinion.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, guys.
All right.
Thank you so much.
We've come to the end of another fascinating episode. Thank you, everybody, for all your amazing questions. Keep them coming. Lynn and I absolutely love having these chats with you and with each other. So please remember to like, comment, share, and subscribe so that we keep the podcast going. And yes, so we will see you in the next episode, where we have some more very fascinating questions from people.
Yes, we've got stingy husbands and divorces.
We've got everything.
Guys want to tune in for that one. Thank you guys so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Please be aware that Lynn and I are here to provide insights, advice, stories that are for educational and entertainment purposes only. None of our content should be considered to be personal, medical, or mental health therapy. If you are experiencing a mental health or physical health challenge, please consult the appropriate healthcare specialist. We are here to provide the best possible content in an atmosphere of positive conversation and personal growth.